Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and back with us now is City Council Speaker Corey Johnson for one of his occasional appearances on the show to talk about New York City issues and take your calls. His own district is Chelsea, Hell's Kitchen, Greenwich Village, West Soho, Hudson Square, Times Square, the Garment District, Flatiron, and parts of the Upper West Side. One big piece of Corey Johnson news this week, he and the mayor just concluded a new budget for the fiscal year that begins July 1st, and it includes reduced fare metro cards for low-income New Yorkers, as the speaker has wanted. The mayor was about the idea, but they're doing it. Hi, Speaker Johnson. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. I'm so happy to be here.
And listeners, as usual, you're invited to call in with questions for the speaker, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Let's start with a couple of budget items. We're not going to make people's eyes glaze over by talking about the whole, what is it, $96
billion budget? $89
billion
budget.
But what about fair fares? Who's eligible for what?
Well, fair fares is this amazing concept that was dreamed up by the Community Service Society with the advocacy of the Riders Alliance a few years ago. And it's a program that is going to allow for people living below the federal poverty line, an individual making less than $12,000 a year, or a family of four making less than $25,100 a year, people that are begging for swipes to get onto the subway that many New Yorkers see, they would get half price metro cards, which would save these families or individuals about over $700 a year, which is a big deal if you're making that little money. And so this was one of the main cornerstones and pillars of our budget response to city councils. We fought, we advocated, we agitated, we pushed and cajoled, and ultimately we came to a great agreement with Mayor de Blasio, and I am thrilled and excited that this is included in the budget.
What's the poverty line for an individual, single individual? Do you
less know? Than $12,000 a year.
So that's who could get it as an individual.
And a family of four is less than $25,100 a year. The number of New Yorkers who fall currently below the federal poverty line is about 800,000 people. We don't expect that every person is going to sign up. We think probably about half of those folks will. The total cost of the program over time, if everyone did sign up, would be about $212 million.
Per year.
Per year. We've budgeted $106 million this year for it, with an implementation date of January 1st, halfway through the fiscal year. New York City's fiscal year starts July 1st. And so we're going to spend the next 6 months advertising, educating, letting folks know about the program, working with community-based organizations, and we want it to be a big success.
So it'll actually take effect for your swipe starting New Year's.
That's right.
And where's the money going to come from? Because if you're talking $100 million for this year, and then as it expands, $200 million plus per year after that. I mean, I realize that's not that much money in the course of a $90 billion budget, but still, $100 million here, $100 million there, you're talking real money, as somebody once said.
Absolutely. And one thing that we need to do in our budget is learn how to save more money, learn how to figure out where there are efficiencies, where we don't need to be spending money that we're currently spending. When Mayor de Blasio took office, his first budget was about $73, $74 billion. This year, up to $89 billion. That's a $15 billion increase in 4 years. One of the things that the council advocated for, which was included in the budget, was a set aside of reserves. So when there is a downturn, we have money to help us cushion a fall a little bit, so we won't have to cut key social service programs. So in this budget, there's $225 million set aside in reserves for the future. And one thing that the mayor and I spoke about during the negotiations was coming up with a real citywide savings plan, agency by agency, to save money in the future.
Another thing that you told me before we went on the air that you're excited about in this budget is funding for disabled students who go to public schools.
I don't want to get emotional. I got emotional when I spoke about this in the rotunda the other night. I'm so moved by the fact that there were five folks that came and spoke on the final day of the budget hearings, the executive budget hearings, where the public can come and testify on whatever they want. I, as speaker, sat through those hearings from the very beginning till the end. I think we ended at 8:30 at night. And there were five folks that came and talked about accessibility for disabled children in New York City. There are many, many schools in New York City where if you have a disabled child and they are in a wheelchair or need other special accessibility requirements, they literally cannot get into the school and get an education. So we advocated, because of what these parents said, for $150 million to make public schools more accessible for these children. And in this budget, we got $150 million to make schools more accessible. I am very, very proud of including this, and I think it's the right thing to do.
And one other thing on the budget before we go to some calls, the total New York City budget, as you said, it'll be $89 billion for this next fiscal year. That's $4 billion more than last year and almost 20% more, 19%. Than when Mayor de Blasio first came to office. And there are some budget watchdogs who say, geez, you know, this is a lot of commitments that the city is making in the de Blasio era, and you all can get away with it at the moment because it's been a good time for tax revenues in New York City. There may be a lot of poor New Yorkers out there, but business is doing well, and so there's a lot of tax revenue flowing into the city coffers. It's not always going to be like that. Are you overextending the city's commitment with this kind of budget growth in the de Blasio years?
It's a great question, and I just want to quickly give some top-line numbers. As you said, the budget's grown 19% in 4 years, $89 billion budget. Last year, tourism at an all-time high. We saw a big bump in one-time money that came in through personal income tax prepayments because of the federal tax law that went into effect, and so we saw a jump there. We've seen an expansion of 700,000 new jobs created in New York City over the last 7 years. And so when you look at the top line numbers, unemployment at an all-time low, budget growing, we're in a good situation. But at the same exact time, 20% of New Yorkers are living either at or below the federal poverty line. 800,000 people, as we said, qualify for this program, Fair Fares. And, you know, we have to ensure we have a social safety net. One thing that I think is really important to say in all of this is that we need to sock money aside. And that's why the council asked for $500 million in reserves. We got $225 million, which brings the total reserve amount up to about $10 billion, the highest amount the city's ever had. No one ever sets a schedule and says, this is when the recession's coming. You never know that. That's why you need to have money set aside.
And what about the Trump tax law? There's been so much speculation, and I guess it's still speculation, about how it's going to affect individuals in New York, families in New York, and revenues for city government and state government. What are you projecting?
Well, it's hard at this point. We don't think the full effect will be seen until 2021 or 2022 for a variety of reasons. One thing that is going to be a major problem at some point is the state and local tax deduction, the SALT issue, where over a third of New Yorkers actually took a SALT deduction. And then you look at the entire metropolitan area, Westchester, Long Island, Northern New Jersey, Connecticut. We are a major area where that tax deduction was very helpful to many individuals and families. So we're afraid of what that effect could have on the city's budget. But we saw a big bump in personal income tax money come in because people prepaid their taxes before the start of the year. We don't expect all of that money to come in next year. We keep seeing property tax revenue climb and climb and climb. And one thing that the council asked for was a property tax rebate of $400 in this budget. We didn't get it. But we have a commitment to create a property tax commission with Mayor de Blasio, put forward recommendations, go to the state legislature next year, and try to finally fix our broken property tax system.
Judy in Richmond Hill, you're on WNYC with New York City Council Speaker Corey Johnson. Hi, Judy.
Hi. Is there, for someone who is disabled, or I have to go to a lot of doctors, and is there a place for me in the subway fare card thing?
Well, I believe that, first of all, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning.
I believe that there are I think, and I could be wrong, there's already a program for folks in the MTA, whether you're a senior citizen or you're someone who is disabled, you get a discounted fare. But I will check on that, and I'm happy to take your information offline and have my staff get back to you. But one thing that I think is really important, Judy, is that so many of our subway stations in New York City are inaccessible. If you are someone who's in a wheelchair, you actually can't use all of our stations.
I walk with a cane, and the stairs are unbelievable for me sometimes.
Yeah, so we need to make our subway stations accessible. Part of the Andy Byford plan, the new head of New York City Transit, has been creating more accessible stations from an elevator perspective, and for the stations that currently have elevators, we have to make sure they're actually working. So much of the time they're out of order. And so one of the things we have to do almost more than 30 years after the Americans with Disabilities Act became a law, we have to make sure we have real accessibility in New York cities and the subways and the schools and everywhere else. So Judy, we're happy to take your information, and I'm happy to have my staff get back to you on that.
Judy will do that. So it's not, in case there is a discount that she's already eligible for, this is not a half fare discount on top of other discounts. So like the senior reduced fare MetroCard, if that person is also below the poverty line,
no
additional discount.
That's right.
Mark in Astoria, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mark.
Good morning, Mr. Speaker. Congratulations on the low fare cards.
Thank you.
I'm a parent of two high school kids, one a graduate of a specialized school and one a graduate of a CTEC program in Queens. And one of the things I haven't heard in the debate about specialized schools is the fact that the number of seats has been fairly static for a long time. And I'm wondering if part of the debate the council could start talking about, or how they would talk about, both expanding the number of specialized schools, expanding the number of seats and facilities in the existing schools so more kids can go, and then also looking at schools like Towns and Harris, Nest, Eleanor Roosevelt, which are also outstanding. We just need to create more seats in more outstanding schools and not only fight about how to get into them.
I agree with you. I think that this is a very big issue, of course, that people are passionate about on all sides when it comes to children's education in New York City. One of the things, I believe Tom Allen, the publisher of City and State, along with my colleague in the council, Rafael Espinal, had an op-ed last week in City and State about this very issue that you just mentioned, which is creating more specialized high schools so that there is more opportunity throughout the city, so we're not static on the number of schools that have existed for a long time. I think that's one way to look at this. Another way to look at this is the numbers that we currently have are not reflective of the city. And the way to actually tackle that, we have to have an open conversation about that engages all stakeholders. The number of Black and Latino students that are getting into these specialized high schools is unacceptable. And we know that when you apply to Harvard or Yale, you don't take one test to get in. At the exact same time, we want to ensure that this is a conversation that everyone feels engaged in, because it's an emotional debate. The state legislature, which has a major role in this, has said that they are not tackling it in the next month, that they're going to come back and look at it next year. So we're going to have time to have a full conversation about more specialized schools, about the test, about how to make sure it's more representative of New York City students writ large. And I think that's a conversation that everyone needs to be engaged in. But I am really grateful for your call this morning in highlighting this fact, which I don't think has been talked about enough.
Mark, thank you for your call. I want to ask you about a hearing that City Council's Committee on Public Safety held yesterday, and we did a segment on this show on Tuesday in advance of it, with respect to the NYPD's gang database, which is that relatively secret, I understand, list of names that the city considers to be people who the city considers to be gang involved, based on apparently very broad criteria, like who they associate with or what color clothing they wear. We talked about it on Tuesday's show with Anthony Posada of the Legal Aid Society and activist Talon Murphy, who criticized the system because a lot of people who don't even know it get tagged by the NYPD as gang involved, and then that comes back to haunt them in later contacts with the NYPD in some of those cases. So what did you learn at that hearing, and does the policy and the practice need to change at all?
Well, I wasn't at that hearing myself, but I, of course, know about this issue. The chair of our Public Safety Committee, Donovan Richards, chaired that hearing, and the chief of detectives, Dermot Shea, testified with other NYPD personnel on this issue. Look, there is very real civil liberties concerns here related to if you have not done anything wrong and you end up in this database, what does that do to your future? It is not transparent. One thing that the NYPD said is that when they had similar lists in the past going after organized crime figures, they had a database that looked at folks that were involved in organized crime. And during that time, those were not people of color. In this instance, many of the folks, the vast majority, are young men of color who are in this gang database. So we have to balance both figuring out who is gang involved and how we actually ensure that they are not harming individuals in New York City. And while at the exact same time, not letting someone who hasn't done anything wrong end up in this database. That is the balance between civil liberties and public safety. There should be a way to address it in a meaningful way. And I look forward to having that conversation. I think I just want to say this, Brian. We do not want young people who haven't done anything wrong to end up in this database and have their lives ruined. And we saw the numbers. The numbers used to be 34,000 people. The NYPD has worked on that number. Now it's down to 14,000 people. There still could be people in that database that shouldn't be in there. So we have to keep checking. They said they check every 2 or 3 years. We have to check more often on those names.
Cassius in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC with Speaker Corey Johnson. Hi, Cassius.
Hey, good morning, Brian. And hello, Corey.
Good morning.
Good morning. I called in the last time you were on the show, and I asked if you'd be willing to admit maybe the city needs to admit that mistakes have been made in regards to letting the app cars grow with no cap on them, no limit. And I saw a photograph of me yesterday, the day before, on Twitter with you meeting with the head of Uber. You know, they always manage to materialize whenever any city starts talking about putting a cap on them.
So let me jump in here just for time. You did meet with the Uber CEO this week, I see, and to Cassius, who I know from his previous calls is a yellow cab driver, and the many others in that that yellow boat who feel this way. They were probably glad to see that last month you apologized, do I have this right, for failing to impose limits on Uber in 2015 when you didn't support a cap on new permits that the mayor proposed. So
I did apologize, yes, and I still feel that way.
And so what'd you tell the CEO of Uber this week?
Well, I just want to be clear, when you're looking at legislation, especially legislation and a legislative package that's as complicated as looking at the yellow industry, the green industry, the for-hire vehicle industry, Uber, Lyft, liveries, congestion issues, driver benefit issues, a cap on licenses. This is all very complicated stuff. And so you have to talk to every stakeholder. So we have talked literally to every sector that would be affected by this, whether it be liveries, greens, yellows, Uber, et cetera, the TLC. And so we're going to have those conversations. We had a hearing on a package of bills that a series of council members have put forward, and we want to talk to all stakeholders. I'm not going to say exactly what was discussed in the meeting because I want to respect the privacy of the meeting, but I'll tell you that Uber heard some very serious concerns from me about where I believe we need to take action on this and where there's a level of disagreement. We're going to keep talking to all stakeholders. This is going to be an issue that's done on the merits with finally this, Brian, three guiding principles. Number one, how do you protect drivers, all drivers, yellow, green, Uber, etc.? Number two, how do you do something on congestion? And number three, how do you create fairness and some level of parity between the for-hire vehicle app regulate cars and yellows?
Let me get two quick responses on two last things. One is, and I know this is a complicated issue, but there was the consent decree this week between the city and the federal government regarding the horrible conditions in so many NYCHA buildings and apartments, which it looks like the city is going to have to spend $2 billion under order of the federal government or an agreement with the federal government. How does that affect the new budget?
Well, that money is going to come out of the capital budget. So in our city, we have an expense budget, which is the $89 billion budget that we just spoke about earlier. And on the other side is a four-year capital budget that rolls in some ways year to year, funding capital things like transportation, public housing, schools, parks, etc. The money that was talked about as part of the consent decree was money that will come out of the capital budget. It's going to have, of course, a big effect, but we can manage it. And ultimately, this is about the life and safety health issues related to NYCHA residents, public housing residents. So I'm glad they're going to get the money. Heat, hot water, mold, lead paint, etc. NYCHA residents deserve habitable homes that give them respect and dignity.
And finally, and briefly, I hear you're losing somebody who's not a public figure, but is very powerful in city council circles, Ramon Martinez, the city council's chief of staff, who Politico New York says has for years cultivated a reputation as being the legislative body's chief enforcer. Why is Ramon Martinez leaving, and what does it mean for getting your agenda through?
You know, I doubt he's listening, but he's going to kill me because he doesn't want me to talk about this. Today he said, because he's such a great person, should be focused on the budget that we're passing and the members who work so hard on it. But I have to say, in the last 5 months, he has been invaluable to me. I actually really love him. He's an amazing person. I worked with him before I was speaker when I was on the council. He is a great person. He is a legend in city government. He has respect, I think, from all 51 council members. It's a serious loss. I'm actually very sad about it, but I'm also very happy for him. He has a big family, and he deserves to go and do great things. So we love you, Ramon. You're the best, and I'm going to keep calling him for advice in the future.
And New York City Council Speaker Corey Johnson, keep coming on here. We'll keep taking phone calls from New Yorkers and talking about what's going on.
Thank you, Brian.